Thanks for joining us for WBOY Presents. I'm Sean Beter. On this edition of the program, we're bringing you audio from our recent Issues and Ales event. In this half of the event, WBOY's Virginia Alvino invited three community and conservation leaders to the stage to talk about Fort Wayne's rivers and riverfront development. Sit back and enjoy this hour of Issues and Ales taped before a live audience at the Phoenix on March 26th as Virginia takes it from here.
Thanks again so much, everyone. Really, it means so much to us that each and every one of you have come out to Issues and Ales tonight. We're really proud to bring you this series, and hope you've enjoyed our first panel. And again, if we didn't get to some of your questions, we really do take those back to the newsroom and dig through them, and your questions help inform our future coverage. So again, keep the questions coming as they come to you this hour, and if we don't get to them, you could possibly hear a story about them later. So if you've got a question that's personal to you, feel free to throw your email on the sheet as well, and we may get back to you. Again, I'm Virginia Alvino, happy to be joined for our hours on water quality and riverfront development. We're going to try and cover as much as we can in this hour. I'm joined by Dan Weyer, commonly referred to as Mr. Rivers. He's the director of the Tri-State Watershed Alliance and also very involved in riverfront planning. Dan.
Thank you.
Dan. Next to him, we have Pam Holliker, who works director of planning for the city, also the head of the Riverfront Planning Committee. So she'll be our go-to for the city's perspective this hour. Yay. Also, Greg Lake. Pun kind of intended. He's the director of the Allen County Soil and Water Conservation District, so our science expert here this hour.
I don't know about that.
We'll see what we can get. There's no question about why we chose this topic at this time. Fort Wayne's rivers have received a lot of attention lately, both for quality efforts and, of course, for riverfront planning, which, how many of you participated? Went to the reveal, went down to the Envision Fort Wayne Center? Probably a lot of you folks, right? So I'd like to first start a little bit about the water itself. We'll definitely get to development, and whatever your questions are, make sure you get those in, too. Let's start a little bit with, this is something that probably all of us encountered in the last few weeks. The water was a little fun. There was something a little funny. So let's just get this just out of the way, just to clear the air. Why was that?
Where do you want to go with it, Pam? Are you talking about the challenge of the
there was the recent snow melt, right? Which had a little bit of an impact on our water. Can you explain a little bit?
Sure. You want to go ahead from the city's perspective?
As far as the impact?
Yeah, why was there a change? Why were people noticing a change in our water?
The melting snow and the way that it was processed at the water filtration plant.
Mm-hmm. Well, my understanding, right, is that the snow melt brings a lot of extra things into our water source that we don't have to deal with necessarily on a daily basis. But that brings me up to my question, you know, that there are a lot of ways for things to get into our water supply, and not just our water supply that we, you know, drink from here locally or our rivers and streams, but ultimately what goes into major water sources into the Great Lakes that millions depend on. What are some of the ways that pollution and other things can make their way into our waterways? Maybe Dan?
Yeah, okay. Sorry for the dead air on the first question. But
I wasn't sure what you were referring to.
But you're absolutely right. I think the first thing to recognize is that the majority of larger communities, their drinking water supply comes from what we call surface waters. They aren't off of wells. So whatever is happening in the environment that is rolling into the rivers or the lakes where a community draws their water from is going to have an impact. You've seen a lot of sign markings now along catch basins that identify this goes to the river, you know, this goes to fish, don't dump your oil down in there, whatever it may be. So I just wanted to give a very simple analogy for everybody that's listening, that we gleefully, you know, come springtime, we park our cars in the driveway and we get the hose out and we wash them and we see that dirt go down the driveway and we're all excited as it goes down the street and into the catch basin. Where's it go after that? It goes into our rivers. And the fact that, you know, that happens, so we need to begin to adjust a little bit what we've always done in the past. You know, maybe we pull off into our lawn, wash our car. Might be a little bit of a problem. We have an ordinance. You're not supposed to park in your lawn. but maybe we're not parking as temporary. So I think as we, it's kind of a paradigm shift on how we think about how we use water and what the consequences are of it.
And that certainly has an impact on what we do in our everyday lives. But, you know, Pam, maybe Greg, are there other large-scale sources that are contributing to our water quality here and throughout the Lake Erie watershed basin?
Well, certainly. I mean, we're sitting here in one of the most rich communities when it comes to its agricultural vitality, its opportunity when you go to the lake. I'm talking about Lake Erie. When it comes to recreational opportunities, it's a huge industry on that lake. Recreational fishing, just the vitality of that lake alone is huge, and I think we greatly underestimate its impact on sort of our part of the greater community, if you will, here in Northeast Indiana, Northwest Ohio, Southern Michigan. And if you really step back and take a look at it, Dan was talking about something very microcosm, right, on your yard or in your driveway. Mm-hmm. But we really need to step back and look at the total respect of the watershed itself. We're sitting here in downtown Fort Wayne, but what's happening up in Hillsdale, Michigan, or what's happening down at St. Mary's, Ohio, or in Decatur, Indiana, or up in Auburn, Indiana, those are all impacting what we deal with or what you deal with here in downtown Fort Wayne. It's a large area that's feeding the St. Mary's and the St. Joe into downtown Fort Wayne, where they come together right there by the water filtration plant. And, of course, they farm the Maumee, heading it off to Lake Erie. So we are, if you want to look at a bullseye of issues, here in the Western Lake Erie, we are the bullseye for the greater Great Lakes region. When they look at candidates that have opportunities, but those opportunities are a part of the result of having issues, they're looking right at us. We are sort of that poster child area. So they look to us to say, if the challenges that you're facing here in the Western Basin, here in the Fort Wayne area and so forth, if it can be solved here and we can help with water quality improvement opportunities, it can be taken and moved anywhere.
But I do hear a big if in that. This water that we're talking about transcends city, county, state lines, a lot of political boundaries. What would you say is the biggest challenge? I mean, Dan, your organization, the Tri-State Watershed Alliance, what are we seeing enough of that holistic approach?
We're making good strides. Mm-hmm. I think that we're realizing that we are all upstream or downstream of someone else. And I don't want to geek out on this too much, but just to bolster a little bit about what Greg is saying, we have 8 miles of river downtown mm-hmm. that we can play on. And so as a community here, when we think about using our rivers, we look at the 8 miles, and I know I hear a lot of people say, well, we should clean that up. Well, as Greg talks about the Western Lake Erie Basin, there's well over 800 miles of primary streams and rivers that flow right through Fort Wayne. There's, you know, over 450 on the St. Joe, which starts in Hillsdale, Michigan, over 450 on the St. Mary's, which comes out of Saline, Ohio. Now, you can drive to those destinations in about 50 miles. Mm-hmm. But with all the feeding streams and rivers that come in, there's over 800 miles. So the challenge is there's a lot of surface area, and with a lot of the wetlands disappearing, a lot of parking lots, a lot of drainage of farm fields. I've been coining this phrase recently that when it rains, we kind of power wash our environment. We don't have those natural barriers to hold it back. So to answer your question, can we do this? Yes, we can. There's models out there. There's examples that we've seen other communities do. We do not have to reinvent the wheel, but we have to make a paradigm shift in our thinking about what kind of stewards we are of our environment and being mindful of the economic progress that we need to continue to make as a community. But we can make these small adjustments, put your car on the driveway sort of thing, and every little bit helps.
Is there a segment or an industry or a county where we're seeing the most progress, one that we can turn to for reference?
I'm gonna deflect that on Greg because we're talking big, right?
And he
was just in the car today doing something called a transect. And twice a year out of the Soil and Water Conservation District, they drive around. Who's the majority of the landowners in our watershed? It is agriculture, hands down. And so he drives around and looks at what sort of best management practices are being employed so we can begin to get a gauge, are we making this paradigm shift in operations? And Greg, what could you say are some bright spots that we're seeing?
Well, certainly when you look up into the St. Joe, or if you look out east of Fort Wayne, unfortunately that doesn't do Fort Wayne any good, but when you look east of Fort Wayne, adoption of BMPs is well on its way. I mean, we've got some tremendous ag resources, or BMP, best management practices.
There we go. For the non-farmers in the crowd.
Being utilized. Having said that, there's still a lot of room for opportunity. Don't get me wrong. We recognize, I'm sort of sitting here thinking that I'm the rural cousin to most of you here in the audience, because my place is 15 or 20 minutes out of town or better, closer to the Ohio state line. So first of all, I want to applaud the city of Fort Wayne for their efforts in downtown Fort Wayne, because trust me, right now I don't have a lot of desire to come into downtown. But when I see the work that Pam and her consultants have done, and I look at the opportunities that come if that plan becomes a reality, I'm looking forward to it. I really am. It will become a site that folks from outside of Fort Wayne draw to. So with that, we also recognize that we need to deal with the water quality side of things, because people often ask the question, well, is it safe? Is the water clean? Can I touch it? What have you? I think there's an awful lot of unfortunate misgivings about the true quality of our water. I think it's in a lot better shape than a lot of people want to maybe give it credit for. Yeah, it's brown. But it's not necessarily going to change. I don't care what we do at this stage in society and how we want to live as a human society. We're never going to see a pristine, clean river all the time. There are times the river does clean up quite well. Dan's cited that example many, many times, when you can often look deep into the rivers and see the bottom, or see an object that's laying on the bottom of the river. But to ever expect our rivers in this part of the country flow like the streams that you might see when you're in the Smokies, it's just not the characteristics. We're in a totally different soils situation here. We have totally different set of dynamics. But most of the time, our rivers are in pretty doggone good shape.
Greg, I'm glad you brought that up before somebody else had to mention brown water around Dan Wire, right, so he doesn't jump out of his chair. Why is the water brown, right? It's a different soil and composition on the ground level. Otherwise, just a real brief synopsis, what would you say to our listeners is the state of our rivers here, right here in inner city?
Well, I'm going to go back to the Clean Water Act of 1972. Why was that put into effect? Because our rivers were getting worse and worse and worse. And so from my 60 years of playing around on the rivers in Fort Wayne, I think if we want to talk about water quality and talk about chemicals, what's in there, I think they were probably worse in the 70s and 80s. And as we begin to implement initiatives like Greg talks out in the agriculture land, as municipalities start, you know, getting a control of what they're beginning to put in the river, Fort Wayne right now, hands down, we are leading in our reduction of sewer overflows into the river. Mm-hmm. So the needle is going in the right direction, Virginia. The needle is going in the right direction. The rivers are better now than they were before. But here's, it's a saying, and I don't want to go on too long here, but a long time ago, someone said to me, a person convinced against their will is of the same persuasion still. And so I have learned that I can't talk to people and convince them that the rivers are safe to recreate on. They need to go have that experience themselves. And that is why last year, in 2.5 days, with the gracious help of Three Rivers Festival and Steel Dynamics, we put just about 4,000 people on the river in 2.5 days. So they had their own experience. Now, I'll sort of end with this, because those who are listening, if you really want to know what condition our rivers are in, we have a river summit coming up. April 8th and 9th, downtown.
You couldn't just let me get to it, Dan?
Oh, sorry.
There is a river summit coming up. I would like to tease that out just a little bit more, though.
Okay.
You know, we talk about some best practices that we know, and we know these in some really big ways, some how farms can reform their entire land use practices, how individuals, the aggregate of that change, can make a small contribution one bit at a time. But when you talk about a paradigm shift, where do you think the actual impetus for change is going to come from? Yes, we've made progress since the 70s with the CWA, but is it going to be a response to consumer demand because enough people have been down to recreate on the river? Is it going to be a response to be in compliance with regulation that's going to come about? Is there going to be an economic benefit? What do you think is going to be the biggest driver to actually making that change?
Well, I'm going to throw my 2 cents worth in,
sure.
And I think Dan's led the charge on this, so I want to give him some credit right off the bat. Never have I seen a mindset change more when, as Dan said, you get somebody downtown and put them on the rivers. And I think that's the key that we're going to continue to use. We need to have folks from within, I sort of refer to it to the Beltway, 469, or those of us that live outside, have a better understanding of and appreciation of the need for both. We need to understand what Fort Wayne's goals, desires, and aspirations are, and there needs to be an understanding from an urbanite as to what the challenges and desires and aspirations are for those that live, work, and make a living out in the country. But the best way is communication, understanding, and appreciation. And there's been no better driver that I've seen in the past several years than get people connected with the river. We're hoping this next year really launches a whole lot more opportunity for connecting people, not only here in Fort Wayne. We're spawning similar interests to try to get people down in the waters in our neighboring communities, up in Auburn, down in Decatur. Defiance is looking for opportunity. And that's why the Tri-State Watershed Alliance was formed. We need to interconnect not only urban and rural cousins, but communities from throughout the greater upper western Lake Erie Basin, because everybody will gain a better appreciation and from that want a better understanding and be more involved with the potential for some success. I don't think it's any one. If there was a magic bullet, we'd have used it a long, long time ago to solve this problem.
Yeah.
But we need to all work together and have a great appreciation and understanding.
Well, now that I've brought it out to 10,000 feet, let's come right back to the neighborhood and bring Pam in on this discussion. Let's go back a little bit. Just a few years, really, there's, you know, we're talking about participation on the rivers. The riverfront development process has been one of quite a bit of local community participation. What was the major impetus for bringing this project all about before there was a study commissioned when we were just starting this process?
Well, the real impetus was when we got the legacy dollars and we went through that whole process with the task force. And really the number one thing that they wanted to utilize that money for was looking at our rivers in a comprehensive fashion. We looked at our rivers downtown before, but it wasn't holistic. In other words, looking at all the engineering aspects, the economic development aspects, the recreation aspects, just all the aspects into one complete vision for the community.
What was the thinking? Was that it was going to be an economic driver? That it was going to be for who's here and now? Was it more a matter of quality of life? Or
I think it was really community driven, and that's what we really wanted to be, as transparent as possible. We opened up the Envision Center at 916 South Calhoun, where people could come in and look at what the consultants had done. We had surveys, questionnaires, we had public meetings, we had group meetings. And what we did all of the time, we kept tabulating those results. We put them up on the website. And that really drove, I think, the process and the final vision. We listened to what Wyla and I had said, Young Leaders of Northeast Indiana. I know Pond was here before. And tried to listen to all segments of the community and to figure out what they wanted. And as you probably know, Virginia, is that they really wanted a balance of things between recreation and ecology, nature, and also then kind of the social aspects, the bars and the retail and that those sort of venues.
Yeah, and I'd like to talk a little bit more about those final recommendations. But first, when you say it was a process meant to engage the entire community, when I've spoken to people in other segments of the community, some minority segments, some communities of color, I've heard concerns. I've heard concerns that, you know, not only, they certainly had the opportunity to participate, and I think they put some of the onus on them for not reaching out, but do you think there was enough outreach from the city's end to them to engage them in this process of, again, just that initial planning stage, those first 2 years?
Well, I think what we can do is we can ask, and we did ask various neighborhood associations if they wanted presentations, if they wanted to provide input. We did present to the Urban League and ask them to go out to their constituencies and see if they wanted to provide input. So we actually went and reached out. We not only had the meetings, but we reached out to various populations and groups.
Sure. And another concern that I've heard from, again, a very similar segment of the population, is that this is going to be not only for sort of this core downtown, but by this core downtown. I think they were worried about minority entrepreneurs having a say as well in this development. And this may be a little bit too far down the road when we're talking about actual developers. But what do you imagine that process to be like down the road?
Well, I think we heard a couple of themes throughout the process, and one was diversity and one was authenticity. And I know that word's been used a lot, but what is authentic to Fort Wayne? Mm-hmm. Our history, our populations, and the diversity. What we heard from a lot of individuals that we don't want homogeneity. You can find that anywhere. But what makes Fort Wayne what it is? And it's the diversity that draws people to various events and places.
Sure.
Virginia, maybe to answer that question, for the radio audience, Pam brought some nice pictures that we can look at of downtown. So when SWA presented that, I think that they were very strategic. I mean, the pictures look very fantastic, nice. We're going to have shops and what have you. But they identified also, here's the other area that you can just come down and hang out, and you don't even have to take a nickel out of your pocket to do that. And if I can harken back to a study, and here's where I'm convinced, I'm going to come back to my story of let's get people on the river. Uh-huh. Last year, when we put people on the pontoons, I went back to the 2010 study from the Knight Foundation that said soul of a community. And they identified three things that really get people connected to their community. And one of those things was an opportunity to gather on a common plane where everybody was accepted. And those folks were waiting for an hour to go for a half-hour pontoon ride. And they were from all walks of life. I'm going to say elderly people, maybe they're the boomers we were talking about earlier, saw young families with five or six kids in tow, and what really cemented it to me, because everybody was there, it was free, it was accessible for everybody. We grouped people in groups of 10 coming through the line, and when we finally got down to the pontoons, I needed to look at the pontoons that we had gathered, and some could take 10 and some could take 8, and I had to sort of separate them a little bit. These people had only spent an hour together, being moved as groups of 10. And when we got down to the pontoons, I'd ask them, how many is in your party? Meaning family. How many did you come here with? And I kept hearing 10. Well, I can't put 10 on. And it was this bond that developed between them. And I went right back to that soul of the community. Let's provide a level playing field that everybody has access to. And you know, I don't know the number, but I know nationally 65% of the people live within a mile of a river. So I would think Fort Wayne's probably higher than that. So everybody is close to the river. And when we start to open this up where people can come and have access, I am confident that people from all walks of life will find their opportunity, whether it's a business opportunity, whether it's a recreation opportunity, whether it's an entertainment opportunity. From what I saw last year from 4,000 people, and I couldn't bust them apart. But when I did finally separate, we were like, oh, see you, you know, we'll see you again in just an hour of meeting. So I think our rivers are that common connector.
We might as well mention as a point just while we're on the topic, what are the other recreational opportunities that currently exist in our local waterways and that are coming up in the real near future?
Oh, boy,
here it
comes. Well, I can kind of address, I mean, besides a lot of the things on the water, right now we have a calendar on riverfrontfortwayne.org that kind of talks about all the things that are being done by the outfitters and the various groups in town. But in addition to that, as Dan really pointed out, we're trying to bring people to the river, either on the river or alongside the river. And so what we hope with this calendar, and we're starting up the activities now, that every week throughout the end of the year, winter, summer, we have activities from scavenger hunt to speaker series to films along the river. And again, most of these things will be free. So again, I think that does draw a lot of people. I know I participated with Dan on the pontoon rides, and we got a lot of people that we never get at public meetings.
Interesting.
A lot of non-English speaking individuals, but it was really good to see that people really felt connected and wanted to come back. So I really think also having the free events and things like that, it draws people. And then we want there to be events and activities for all ages. I mean, some things more for seniors, because I know even with the water, with the pontoon rides, there were some seniors that had problems just even getting there. And certainly for younger people and the millennials, really try to get things. And really for people of all ages. So we're working on that. And I think if you get on the website, you'll see a lot of different activities that are brand new.
Yeah.
So, Virginia, two heads are better than one. when folks go to riverfrontfw.org, that's where they'll find Pam's list, you have an opportunity to respond back. We want to hear. I just heard an idea today. Went with a bunch of high school kids down looking at what they're redesigning downtown, the riverfront. And a gentleman comes up to me and said, we need a rock skipping event or contest or festival. And I'm like, really? And oh, you brought up his phone. Let's look at this. Look at what happened to this community. It's just outrageous how it can grow. I mean, that's a very simple, everybody knows how to throw a rock. Okay? So I think when you talk about events, I mean, I could lay out some very high-end plan things that we have coming along, but even those very simple things will begin to... night study, bring people back together.
Sure. And Pam, you're at the helm of this sort of process. We experienced this grand reveal. We've got these renderings now, and again, they're called the grand vision, and it is quite a grand vision, and I don't think anybody's expecting it to happen overnight. But can you illustrate a little bit for us who are not on the inside what that process looks like right now? There's a lot of planning yet to do and a lot of things still to determine, I know, but what is the state of the riverfront development process?
Sure. Well, right now the city is owning the process. At some point, there's going to have to be someone that manages it, that manages the maintenance, the activities, and the development. So right now we're trying to lay the foundation really for the development. In other words, look at all of the pre-development sort of things that we have to do, from doing environmentals to property acquisition, site clearance. So we're looking at all of those things. So that's one of the areas. Then just the activities and events that we talked about. And thirdly, the maintenance. And you'll be hearing more about this, cleaning the river itself, just the logs and the other debris, as well as cleaning the banks, looking at natural species, natural vegetation, clearing out the invasive species. So that's something you'll start to see do this year. And you'll start to see, and the mayor will be announcing something in a couple weeks, how we're going to kind of organize ourselves to actually move forward in all of those areas.
Sure.
And also we're doing a lot of fundraising. As you saw, Fort Wayne Community Foundation pledged money, Follinger Foundation, and we're really hoping that there will be lots of other both stakeholders and organizations that also pledge dollars, because it is going to take a lot of private sector and also other dollars to...
Right. So as many, you know, as much as left to do, from governance to fundraising to structure, actual designs for some of the things that we're seeing in these renderings. Let's start with that initial phase that the mayor has said sort of from day one of the reveal that's going to be the target for this first part of the process. I've heard a lot of already just questions here in response to our coverage of the process, people concerned that these processes of cleaning up invasive species and sort of maintaining our river banks and levees and things like that are going to be founded in the right type of science. Could you reassure some of our listeners what your sources for guidance are in that effort?
Oh, certainly. We've been looking right now at various groups that look at the environment. And we have several consultants, one of which we've actually worked with already, called Biohabitats, are probably one of the best in the nation that has done these. They're called riparian master plans, and they know all about the invasive species. They know about the natural species that we want to promote.
Just briefly, riparian meaning just that strip of vegetated
it's
land.
It's really the riverbank.
It's
basically a riverbank plan where you would want to plant additional types of vegetation, what sort of animals are along the river that you want to preserve. And and that would actually be looked at section by section. So it wouldn't be, for example, myself or some volunteer going out there and saying, I don't like this plant.
Sure.
But it's really looking at those. And then also how to remove those plants. And they'd also be looking at what sort of equipment we would need, because obviously we'll need some boats and other types of equipment, and also personnel to do that. For example, the Buffalo Bayou in Houston, where our consultants came from. Is it Houston? Yeah, Houston. They actually had a whole maintenance crew, and we'll have to have that too. Yeah. To clean up the river and the riverbanks.
I'll push back just a little bit. The initial study that Biohabitats did release that was given to the city quite a while ago was a little bit dire. It found that the majority of our riparian strips were not in good condition, and that there was a real loss of connectivity, a really big loss of stability, and a lot of the practices that we have been using. Now, some of those are in response to the Army Corps of Engineers standards that we're responding to. But some other practices are not always holistically good for maintaining this natural habitat. Do you think that as we venture into this new stage of riverfront development, we'll be able, sure, we've got that management plan that, you know, is still yet to be commissioned from the city, mm-hmm. but do you think this will be sort of a tipping point where we'll be able to look a little bit more comprehensively at our natural landscape?
Well, I definitely think so. And I know the mayor, that is one of the first things he really wants mm-hmm. to kick off. And I think he's very passionate about actually doing something and doing something right, especially downtown, because, I mean, while all of our rivers and banks are important, I think the focus right now is really in the downtown area.
Virginia, to help a little bit on that, Biohabitats is recognized as one of the authorities across sure. the country. And at some point in time, we're going to get to that summit, right? The founder and president of Biohabitats will be coming to the River Summit to speak about, and you use the word, to speak about the holistic approach that we need to look at when we look at our water assets, our rivers, not only in Fort Wayne, but as Greg says, reaching out to the tri-state area. So certainly Biohabitats will develop a riverine management plan that will begin to connect those gaps for us. We have levees for a reason. Mm-hmm. You know, we're a city that, some people say we saved ourselves, some people say we flooded ourselves, but it's been a tremendous asset to save those communities, mm-hmm. to protect them. But now the challenge is to connect those places. What have the levees disconnected that we can come back? And I am very confident, if you asked a question, will we be able to do that? Yes, we will.
You're listening to Issues and Ales Riverfront Development on 89.1 WBOI. We need to take a quick break. Stay with us. This is WBOI Presents. I'm Sean Beter. Let's get back to our discussion of riverfront development recorded this March at Issues and Ales at the Phoenix in downtown Fort Wayne. Here's WBOI's Virginia Alvino.
And speaking of geeking out, I'm so sorry. I'm like, let's talk about riparian buffers for the rest of the hour. Yeah. But I will get to these wonderful questions that so many of our audience members have come up with. And a lot of them are very timely. Just this week, we've been hearing about the open-air ban on bars and the deck, and a lot of people concerned they're going to need to now apply for a waiver through the State Department mm-hmm. of Health that is a variance because they currently are not compliant with state law. Some folks are optimistic, even the mayor just today, Mayor Tom Henry, appealing to the state to grant that variance for the halls, the deck at halls. They also have plans to expand. So a lot of people are, you know, concerned that if we want other setups like the deck, which is so popular in downtown Fort Wayne, is that code going to have to change, do you think, or will this impede our development plans at all?
I think potentially it could impede sure. some of the development plans, sure, and that's why I think that there's going to be strong lobbying by the mayor and I think other state representatives and senators to really change the law. And I really think that laws and regulations are meant to keep things safe, but a lot of times they don't keep up with current trends, and I think this is one of those. And so I'm very confident that it will change.
Virginia, do you know that it is illegal to spit your gum out on the sidewalk around the courthouse?
Oh, I would never do that.
Okay, so unless it's been removed, that's been on the books since 1800. So I agree with Pam is that we have laws that are there for protect and for safety, but I think it's probably time to update some of those.
Sure.
The deck has been operating for about 8 years. They've been legally compliant for those 8 years. They haven't done anything different. So it's probably time to maybe update what we have there.
Because a part of these grand visions plan, I mean, there are quite a few eating establishments
bars.
And
definitely.
They might not all be the same setup. The code just requires walls. So obviously the patio seating here is in compliance, but a little bit complicated. Here is a question from Donald. As the owner of a residential property within the boundaries of the proposed riverfront development, what options are available or recommendations can be made regarding my property? How do you think his property or others in the near vicinity will be impacted?
I'm not sure where his property is located.
Sure.
Some of the properties potentially may be purchased if they're within one of the areas that we have kind of slated for development. So without really knowing where he's located. Some of the areas, for example, along Wells Street that are in the area, more than likely will remain as they are now. They're functioning very well. Some of the other areas, for example, the Outfitters, I don't think, you know, that's certainly going to go away. If anything, that will be embellished and grow, I'm sure, significantly. So mm-hmm. I don't really know where the gentleman lives, because many of the properties may just stay just as they currently are.
I mean, are there any plans? Do you think any other property owners will be impacted in any other way? Are you planning on buying out any current residents or anything? I can imagine that's a possibility.
Well, and I know I passed out, or someone should have passed out, some areas of like the promenade area. Mm-hmm. Obviously, any of the areas that we're looking at developing, for example, where the promenade is, kind of where the Reemstekbeck site is.
Oh, and I'm so sorry. We kind of skimmed over what phase one is, which is the promenade. If you just want to kind of, have renderings, but if you want to kind of
the promenade, really, if you know where the Wells Street walking bridge is, it's really in that area. If you know where the Smurfit buildings are, the jail just to the west of the jail, and really to like Ewing Street, Superior, and then to go north to where Wells Street is, Bloomingdale Park area, if you know where the Pepsi warehouse is. Mm-hmm. Really, that entire area is really slated to be phase one. And most of all of those properties right now are either not in use or in some kind of commercial or industrial use.
Yeah. And a question just came in. I know we're going over just this phase one, but as part of the grand vision, how much nature is built into the plan? We know that there are some spaces that are going to be preserved. I know there's a proposal for a nature conservancy. How much nature is part of the plan?
I think that's a great question, because I think everyone has assumed that we're going to try to build everywhere and in floodway areas and that. And actually, only about a fifth of the area is planned for some sort of development and hardscapes. Now, there will be lots of softscapes. In other words, trail areas and plantings and that sort of thing. But a large part of the area is for kind of nature and ecology. And then another large part of the area is for recreation. And, of course, the water filtration plant isn't going anywhere. So I would say, you know, more than most of the area is actually planned to be more kind of non-developed state.
You know, Virginia, a very simple visual, and I'm going to promote the website again, riverfrontfw.org. If you go there, all of the plans, all the pictures that are on there, but if you look at one that includes the entire area, just look at the green compared to the red or the pink where they have development. So we heard three major themes that people wanted to have on downtown Riverfront. They wanted a hard edge that might have bars, restaurants, that sort of thing. They wanted recreation opportunities where they're out in nature and they're recreating, where there's bikes or trails or active activities in the park. And then they wanted the opportunities to just go experience nature and the rivers and the riparian environment. And I'm going to go back to 2011. We brought a gal up here who was very instrumental in Chattanooga's revival. Her name was Ann Coulter, and she always tells me I'm the other Ann Coulter. And
maybe not the right.
Right. And I took her out on a pontoon ride. And again, we have 8 miles downtown. We have three rivers. And as we tooled around the rivers downtown, and this is in 2011, she said, "You guys can do everything here. You have so much room. You can do your hard edge. You can do your nature walks. You can do your environmental." And she said, "The good thing is you haven't ruined it yet." Mm-hmm.
Oh, but speaking of doing everything, we've got a question here. Will our rivers ever be fishable or swimmable, or are they safe to swim in now? So can we do everything in our rivers?
Yes. Now let me give you the background. People will say, "Oh, wait a minute, Wire said to go swimming in the river." No, I didn't.
Yeah, I would watch that.
Okay.
And the city, by the way, is not promoting that.
Sure.
I'll tell you
sure,
that right
sure.
now. Do not swim in the river.
But Pam and I and some of her staff have had a discussion in the last couple weeks, and what we really need to get out there is data. And as we talked a little bit earlier, I'm confident that our needle is moving in the right direction as far as water quality. So Greg's group out there, and we just had this discussion today, and I love it. One of his board members said, "If we're so concerned about water quality, why is it such a challenge to get the funding to conduct these water tests. And it seems to be a little bit of a challenge. Now, challenge for us because we go way beyond, and I'm saying Allen County, we go way beyond the norms. We don't just test two places. We test at one time 62 places, 42 places last year. And this is up and down on the rivers. This, the city utility, City of Fort Wayne, is really up their game on water testing. Now, what I want to get to is it's kind of a convoluted way, and I don't want to geek out too much here on that. But
with we're beyond that. Okay. Just go ahead.
The challenging number that we have to address is a count on E. coli. And the E. coli count is kind of like the white lab rat. The E. coli itself will not, that's not problematic, but it's an indicator, okay? So here is very quickly a statement. When the E. coli count hits 235, it's an indicator that there may be fecal bacteria that, if ingested, may cause intestinal disease. I mean, that's the language to it. So here's the challenge we have. In order for a municipality to say, okay, your rivers are okay, you can swim in them, they take a month average of readings, and if at any one time in that month it exceeds 235, then, okay, it's not swimmable. Well, we are water sampling every week, and that data is out there. What we need is somebody out here that can put that into an app, because other communities have. Because when you want to go kayaking, it's like tomorrow or today. And if you could pull up what was the water sampling most recent, how is that water quality, we'll find that a lot of those E. coli readings are 89, 111, 155. Now, when it rains, watch out, because it's 2,000. But in about 72 hours, it's a natural thing. Rivers take care of themselves, and we're good to go again. Fishing, absolutely fish.
Yeah, people are already fishing. People
go
fish
to fish, kayak, recreate. Mm-hmm. And here's the common sense. I mean, if it's raining and the rivers are raging, like, they're coming up right now. You know, it would be exciting if you're an adventuresome person. But before you eat your sandwich, take a wet wipe, clean your hands. If you dump it and you're in the water, you're not going to die. But when you go home, take a shower.
But even when rivers are at their best, when we're not in a rain event, we just had another question about direct contact. What about that and swimming? Will we ever be at that place?
People hearken back to when we used to have a municipal beach and we swam there. That was in the 50s at City Utilities Park, which is now Johnny Appleseed Park. How many chlorinated pools did we have at that time? We didn't. And so that's where people swam. They swam in rivers and lakes and streams. So the idea of can we ever swim in the rivers again, I'm not so sure that there's really that appetite to do that.
I would definitely disagree. Like, I just, I don't want to swim at the Y. I want to jump off a rope and into the river.
Okay, so.
Oh, I didn't mean it to be a political statement. I just like to swim in rivers. Oh, my God, I'm so
So to help,
and, right, and right. We have, okay. And we have events that are sponsored by places like the city that do encourage, if not direct, then very close contact with the.
Okay,
water.
So let me help you with that because you could do that. Now, okay. Pam said we're not endorsing it.
No.
So I'll be very careful to say we're not.
I didn't expect you.
But if we had that app, where we had that information right there, I gleaned over 4 years of water testing data for the month of July, which is the raft race. That's particularly why I did it, because it came back. The St. Joe River met full body contact standards almost 80% of the time. Mm-hmm. The St. Mary's River met full body contact standards about 2/3 of the time.
I was in the raft race and I'm still alive.
Amen, brother. Amen. You're looking at a guy who has probably spent more time shoulders down in the river than some people have lived.
I guess my question is your skin green, though?
Sorry, I warned you guys this hour was going to get rowdy, so here we are. But, you know, when we do see, I mean, E. coli, it is the leading indicator. When you look at the EPA's evaluation of our local waterways, it's tenfold the biggest probable polluter. But when it comes to things like CSOs, sewer overflows, we know exactly when they are, and we know where they are, and we know their schedule for improvement, right? But
even with those improvements, I mean, the city plans to spend over the next, and it's not even 10 years, over $200 million to build this huge tunnel.
Yeah, the biggest public works project in city
ever.
History.
And that still is not going to bring our rivers when, you know, I mean, we're looking at what happens in all the agricultural communities. That still isn't going to make our rivers, at least the city's position, clean, so clean that we would want to recommend people swimming in them. So even with that sort of investment, and $200 million is a pretty large investment, we probably have to invest $1 billion. And is the community really ready for those sorts of cost, and they're all, you know, bred out or given out to the consumer, so people could so that we would endorse people swimming in the rivers. And I just don't think that that's the case.
Greg, would you share the bacteria source tracking?
Well, let me sort of broaden the picture a little bit too, and I'm going to go back to Dan's comment. Common sense, folks. If we've just seen a significant storm event, just as Fort Wayne's CSOs are impacted, the same happens out on the landscape. So if we've got some other sources that are coming, whether it even be wildlife, and Dan mentioned a study that we worked with a professor, this has probably been now maybe close to a decade, be great to do it again, with a professor out at IPFW who worked with us to do an assessment of where are we finding this problem, what's its source, how bad is it, and where is it the worst. So through the work that this professor did, we went out and we collected fecal samples from human to duck, to swine, to you name it, dog, cat, you name it, and we came back and we were shocked to the result. Livestock and human were well below what our expectations were. We had a lot of other sources. Ironically, the one that came to the top that shocked us, horses. Horses. We'd have never, if I'd had to throw a target at one, I'd have never guessed horses. And the significance goes back to Dan's comment. Common sense, yes, okay. As a municipality, I certainly support Fort Wayne's position that they got to be very cautious about getting you encouraged to get into the river. But if folks, if we use common sense, I'm with you. I was in a raft race too, and trust me, in it multiple times and enjoyed it. And I'm glad to see that it came back. I think it's just common sense. And I go to the lake, and I'll bet you when I'm standing at the sandbar in Crooked Lake, I don't want to look at the bacteria count that I'm standing in up there either. So.
All right, that's enough poop talk. We're going to go back to development a little bit. We had a question come in. Will more open spaces, which is quite a big part of the grand vision, call for more surveillance? Are there any possible safety issues in such big public spaces that, honestly, the city doesn't have a ton of right now, besides parks?
More than likely, there would have to be, you know, some more policing of those areas.
Sure.
I mean, where there's people, you need security.
Any other social concerns about just the dynamics of having more people in this area?
Well, the interesting thing is generally when there's more people, there's less crime, there's less those issues. So actually, the additional people, while there might actually be more crime just because there's people there, usually people are safer in numbers. So I actually think we think that the area will be safer than it is today.
Last question, since we're just about out of time, a little bit more on the science and water quality side. John wants to know what can be done to settle out the fine solids in our rivers and or aerate the water to improve the smell, which we do experience mostly during rain events. Things like small waterfalls or settling ponds, which I think are a part of the grand vision, but I've heard a little bit of a controversial response from environmental groups on.
Just a quick comment. Let's not think that when we talk about riverfront development, it's all brick and mortar.
Sure.
If we have these settling ponds, if we have these open spaces that could be filtering, that is a big benefit that will help.
And we're actually applying for some grants now for some sediment control and other things. And one of the things we're looking at is kind of we're calling it an urban ecology center. That was one of the names, in fact. The gentleman from IPFW's in the back, Bruce Kingsbury, and we're really looking at that to kind of show people different ways that we can clean up our rivers and wetlands and all sorts of things like that. So that would be educational as well as helping to clean up our rivers.
I was going to say, what additional opportunities are there for education, and do you think that'll be an ongoing challenge as we go forward with development, or do you think we're just already at a critical mass where that won't be a challenge?
I think education is critical. Get people there, get them to experience, get the data live. I think the more information we push out, I'm personally confident that the more information somebody has, the better view they're going to have of our rivers and our downtown riverfront. I think, mm-hmm. unfortunately, and it's nobody's fault, but it's been an unbalanced information load over the last 10 or 20 years. We warn about flooding, we warn about sewer discharges, but we never talk about that 70 or 80% of the time that it's sunshiny and go out and fish and kayak.
Sure.
So there's been a misbalance on that. So I think more information is going to be critical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Before we wrap it up, Dan, why don't you tell folks one more time when the River Summit is?
Oh, boy. Yes. We had a River Summit in 2011, and so here we are in 2015. Uh-huh. And just in light of everything that we've been talking about this evening, it's appropriate to educate the public. So in Fort Wayne at the Grand Wayne Center on April 8th and 9th, we're going to have education sessions just going crazy, and I'm going to go back a little detail on that. And then on Saturday the 11th is a very family-friendly day, and we're going to have sites all along the downtown river, which is pretty much in this target area. And we're trying to open up whatever door we can to get somebody there. If you're a birdier, there's going to be a birdier person there. If you're a fisherman, there's going to be a fisherman person there, what have you. Now, Wednesday night, it's a free public event, compliments of the county commissioners, and we're bringing in two dynamic speakers that are going to educate the public. One is Keith Bowers, president and founder of Biohabitats. He's going to take that big view, and then he's going to be followed up by a gentleman by the name of Chad Pograki. And he almost single-handedly, if you can imagine, this task of cleaning up the Mississippi River. So if you want to find out about Chad Pograki, it's livinglandsandwaters.org, but the guy is phenomenal. He's going to come out in blue jeans and a t-shirt, and when he walks away, our community is going to feel, yes, we can do this. So that's Wednesday evening, the 8th.
All right. Any last words? Yeah, that's about all the time we have for this month's Issues Nails. Thank you so much for this hour's panelists. That's Dan Wire, Pam Holliker, and Greg Lake. Thank you so much to our previous hour. A special thanks to the Phoenix for hosting us and being so accommodating as well. Also to the WBOI News team, Katie Anderson is producing, Sean Beeter, thank you so much for all of your work, as well as Leah Denny, our special events coordinator. We've got Peggy Gaylord here, Jackie Didier as well, and Peter Dominowski, the head honcho. But our biggest thanks is to you, our listeners. Thank you for coming and listening and for all your great questions, what we really do take to heart. And of course, for supporting public radio here in Northeast Indiana.
That's all the time we have for WBLY Presents. A big thanks to our guests, our hosts at the Phoenix, and everyone who showed up for the discussion. WBLY Presents is produced by Katie Anderson and myself. I'm Sean Beeter. Join us next time for another edition of WBOI Presents.